What's happening? Hour number two, Jay Mart and Ramon, 104.5 The Zone. Glad to have you with us. Thrilled to be doing it. We're courtesy of All Four Seasons Garage Doors in Nashville. AllFourSeasonsGarages.com/Nashville to learn more. 11-year NFL veteran involved for life, Ramon Foster, Jonathan Schaefer, Jason Martin. That is the crew of Jay Mart and Ramon at Ramon Foster, at Schaefer on Sports, at Jay Mart Radio, at Jay Mart and Ramon, as we welcome you in. We've got Brian Rice coming up in the next segment.
Yeah.
Talk a little SEC. Start to look at Tennessee, Florida. Mm-hmm. Maybe a takeaway from Saturday's game, which maybe you were impressed, maybe you weren't. The score would say maybe you could be impressed, but the performance might tell you otherwise. I've kind of heard middling things. I don't know anybody's over the moon about that, but hey, it's a win.
Yeah.
Top seven, bottom three in the NFL. That was Ramon's number in the NFL, so that's what we do instead of a top five, bottom five. We give you a little bit more of the top shelf, a little bit less of the low shelf. The low shelf, I feel like we probably are on the same page here.
I think I added a team I didn't last week on my low
well,
shelf.
Well, I took one off of mine, and I had to choose between two.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the Texans are playing hard, so I don't have them in the bottom three anymore.
Same. My guy went on the same page with that one.
I've got the Jags last. I've got the Jets right behind them. And I've got Atlanta.
Yes, sir.
The only other one I thought about was the Giants.
But
they're at least like in the vicinity of a win.
Yeah, they're fighting a whole lot better than what we're seeing.
Atlanta just looks bad.
Atlanta, if I can be serious for a minute.
If I can be serious for a minute.
They may be the worst team, I feel like. I know they're, there's 30, 31, and 32, like. They're right there with Jacksonville at this point right now, and they got a franchise quarterback. So that's almost a veteran franchise quarterback. It's really almost unacceptable how they're going about this thing so far.
Top seven. Man, this was tough. This was tough for me.
I think you could have picked from 11 or 12 teams.
I actually have 11 written down because I have four in parentheses.
All right.
Because I think it's just difficult because you're trying to parse one loss here and there, mm-hmm. and whether or not teams have actually played anybody to tell you if they're good or not.
Mm-hmm. My number one, I think we both got that one.
Well, wait, we go the other way.
Oh, we'll go
we go 7-1.
All right, for sure.
You really think I'll be listening to you? I ain't listening to you.
I did go first last week, so what do you have at 7?
7, I got the Raiders.
I've got Cleveland at 7 because they beat Houston, and they lost their week one game. I've still got them top seven over some other one-loss teams. But I just haven't – they lost to a great team.
Right.
And then they beat Davis Mills, and they didn't just dominate Houston in that game. So that's why I kind of knocked them a little bit because I'm looking at what they're doing, not just what their roster is. I'm trying to figure out exactly my criteria. I think that's it, so I've got Cleveland 7. Shave?
Raiders at 7.
Yeah. Cleveland couldn't make mine because that game was a little close for them to be playing Houston in my eyes. But, hey, they won, like you said.
See, and I don't have Cleveland in my top seven either, and I feel kind of bad about that.
See, I was, 2-0 trying to choose between them and Buffalo.
Well, they're 1-1. Exactly.
1-1, yeah. Them and Buffalo?
Yeah. Which spoils that I don't have Buffalo in my top seven.
And neither do I.
But I almost did.
I have Buffalo at 6.
Okay. I got Baltimore at 6.
I got San Fran at 6. I know. You can pick either way.
Well, see, I've got San Fran at 5, and I kind of would rather have San Francisco at 6 and Baltimore at 5. Just because the Niners have played the Lions and the Eagles. And that's it. And the weird stuff that's happening with some of the personnel, mm-hmm. with what Shanahan's doing, I'm going to flip that. I'm going to put the Niners at 6 and Baltimore at 5.
You want to hear something almost disrespectful? I don't even have Baltimore in my top 7.
I don't either.
Okay.
I don't know how you do that, but they lost an overtime game to the Raiders, who's in your top 7, and then beat our number 1 last week, and you're number 2.
The teams in front of them, I can't just take them out because of that.
I'm just trying to figure out who the teams are in front of them that are more impressive.
More impressive so far? I'm edging towards undefeated. Carolina is my number 5.
Okay, I don't have them in the 7 at all.
Okay.
I don't even have them in the 11.
Beat a really good Saints team, we thought, in week 2. I mean,
missing 8 coaches now.
Saints?
COVID.
Jay,
literally, they were missing everybody.
If we're not going to excuse players for going out there, we can't excuse them for
not
having
coaches. Well, I get it. I'm just saying it does need to be mentioned. It's not an excuse. Oh, well, it is the truth.
Players play.
So I've got, like I said, I got Browns, Niners, Ravens, 7-6-5. And you've got?
Raiders, San Fran, Carolina.
Okay.
I switched mine around last moment because you're talking about Baltimore. Raiders, Buffalo, Baltimore, 7-6-5.
Okay.
My four, Kansas City.
Kansas City.
Raiders.
Raiders, your four.
Look, they beat Pittsburgh and Baltimore in a six-day span. And right now, if you had to vote for the MVP, Derek Carr might actually win it.
He's been playing lights out. You give credit where credit's due.
Kyler Murray.
That's a team that I hate to give. That's a team that I hate to give credit to, obviously, because that's our rival. That's Denver's rival in the AFC West.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just looking at the results. I'm looking at the way Waller's playing. I'm looking at Carr being very comfortable out there. And again, they beat Baltimore, who beat Kansas City. And then they went to Pittsburgh and beat the Steelers.
Yeah.
I think those two results put them in my top. Do I think they're the fourth best team in the league? Probably not. But I think you have to factor in what's actually happened. And they've put themselves in a good spot, and they're 2-0. If you want to put the Panthers at 5,
yeah,
what's more impressive, beating the Saints or beating two AFC North teams in 6 days, one of them being Pittsburgh at Heinz Field?
This pool is thick, it's heavy. It's like swimming in mud trying to pick your 7 out of this. I just think I'm looking at Carolina. Sam Darnold's playing really well. They beat a in-division opponent with the Saints. They got to step up on them right now. Until they lose, I'm just like, well, I can't not put them in.
When their first week, the Jets?
It was the Jets.
I was asking. They beat them like they were
the Jets.
Right.
But I'm looking at it like the Raiders got a blemish on their record. Yes, they lost to Kansas City, but
Steelers, the Raiders don't have a blemish. They're 2-0.
I mean, not the Ravens.
Yeah.
They have the Ravens. They have, I mean, they're 1-1. I'm with that. I still think I'd take Kansas City over. It was
Kansas City in an overtime loss.
Yeah.
At the very end on a Monday Night Football game.
I can't put them over the Raiders. San Fran or Carolina have been undefeated right now.
I don't have Carolina in the top 10. I don't see them as a top 10 team right now. I'm impressed with what they're doing. But I actually think the Raiders' loss is more impressive than the Jets' win.
Ravens. But we're talking about this week.
No, I mean for Baltimore. Baltimore's loss to the Raiders is more impressive to me than beating the Jets right now.
It's a dub, though, Jay.
I know.
That's where I'm with you all the way on it, but they're playing well enough to where they justified it. In week two.
Regardless.
Yeah.
You both had Kansas City at 4, right?
Yeah.
I have Kansas City at 3.
Who's your 4?
The Raiders.
You said the Raiders. Okay. Yeah. And my number 3 is Arizona.
Arizona 3.
I don't have them in the 7.
Arizona's not in your 7. How?
Oh. The Vikings win didn't do much for me. That Vikings team's not good at all. They should have lost. This would be a 1-1 team if it wasn't for a kick that went awry. I'm just not quite sold yet. I had them in the 4 with the Bills, the Titans, and the Seahawks.
Okay.
I had Bills, Cardinals, Titans, Seahawks kind of all knotted up there.
I like what Arizona's doing so far. A pleasant surprise.
I don't disagree. He just like Derek Carr, I mean, Kyler Murray would be in the mix for an MVP vote right now also.
If they escape injuries, this team can be really good. As of right now, what they're showing us, Arizona can be solid, man.
I agree. I just look at it and I say, I'd pick the Browns to beat them. I'd pick the Niners to beat them. I'd pick the Ravens to beat them. And I'd pick the Raiders and Chiefs to beat them.
Mm.
So I look at it that way. Number 2, I've got the Rams.
Yep.
Rams.
And number 1, I got the Bucks.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Well, we agree on 1 and 2.
Different.
A lot different this, remote, yeah, a little bit different this week. Last week we had the same top 7 in a different order, but we had the same 7 teams. This week a little bit different.
Yeah, this one's way different. Again, we're not looking at the entire horoscope. I'm looking at week 2, what they've done thus far. That's how I based it.
Well, see, I don't think you did then, because you've got the Raiders faded with 2 better wins than the Cardinals have.
Well, no, but the way the Cardinals have won, I think the trajectory of like what they've done to come back against Minnesota, yes, it's a field goal kick.
It's a team that's about to fire their coach.
They won.
Missed field goal, they lost.
You were assuming that.
No, I'm not. They're getting rid of Mike Zimmer.
Oh, Mike Zimmer. Oh, you're talking about, I thought you were talking about the guy you don't like in Arizona.
No, right now Kingsbury's fine. I'm talking about who they beat.
I think they're firing Mike Zimmer because of the contract they signed with Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, buddy.
Well, I think it's because he never takes accountability for anything he does. He always passes the buck on to somebody else. But I like that we have different.
Yeah.
I like that we have different answers there.
Shay, who's your bottom three? We get those.
I had the Jets 32, Jacksonville 31, Detroit 30.
Oh, Jets.
You got Detroit at 30. I got Atlanta at 30, but you had Atlanta as well.
Atlanta would have been 29 for me.
Okay.
I give them a little bit of credit for coming back against Tampa Bay, because if they would have folded up the 10 completely, they definitely would have been in the bottom three. But they at least gave some effort late in that game.
Well, we'll tweet it out. You can tell us what your top seven is. Your bottom three, it's not as important, but you can tell us that too. But tell us what your top seven is, where you agree with us and not. I see the chat is doing so. Zone TV, YouTube, Twitch, Facebook Live, Twitter. Brian Rice on the other side from WNML, Sports Animal in Knoxville. We'll maybe get like a thought on what happened on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
and then start to pivot and talk about the SEC as a whole. How good is Bama? What did Florida show? And what does that spell for Tennessee in the swamp this weekend? We'll talk about it. Next, Jay Martin, Ramon, 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back, Jay Martin and Ramon, 104.5 The Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Stores in Nashville. Ramon Foster, Jonathan Schaefer, Jason Martin, boys with you till 10 a.m. this morning. John Glennon, Broadway Sports, joins us in the fourth hour of the show. Rashawn Evans will join us at the top of the third hour. Titans linebacker coming off the big win in overtime in the Pacific Northwest against the Seattle Seahawks. That'll open up the third hour right now. On the Marksman Real Estate Hotline, our good friend Brian Rice from WNML, the Sports Animal, the Eric Gaines Show, of course. Brian, what's going on?
Just a rainy day in Knoxville. As John Schaefer, I don't think he said we haven't seen the sun since the weekend. I just hope it's not a microcosm for football this weekend, but good to be with you.
Yeah, like I said, there's animals lining up two by two around a large wooden ship down the street from us. It seems like it's been raining. Even though the Titans were playing in Seattle, it was a rain here. Not in Seattle, at least all weekend long. Hopefully everybody is safe out there, because there were some high water marks, I know, yesterday. All right, so Tennessee won on Saturday. That was not really in dispute before the game started, we felt like. I have seen some people with kind of muted feelings about this performance. Full disclosure, I didn't watch all four quarters of this game, because I just didn't feel the need. There were other things that needed to be done that day. But what do you take away from Hooker? What do you take away from Tennessee in general on Saturday?
Well, Tennessee didn't look very sharp on offense. Now, that seems like a ridiculous thing to say. He scored 56 points. And I don't, you know, there were some people mad after the game. Well, they didn't do this. They didn't do this. If you're mad after 56 to nothing, you need to probably find some other way to do your Saturdays. But offense didn't look very sharp, didn't run the ball very effectively, which was not really a problem in game one against Bowling Green, which is certainly a better run defense than Tennessee Tech. They ran the ball a little better against Pittsburgh, against a quality opponent, although Pittsburgh's result this past weekend may belie that. You know, but the defensive effort is what I take the most positive from. Anytime you shut out an opponent at any level and were able to do it through four quarters, I take some positives from that. The defense did some good things in the first half. The backups on defense did some good things in the second half, but mostly they stayed engaged with the game. They stayed on edge all game long to make it a complete performance where you didn't just sleepwalk through an entire second half, end up letting one double-A team score a couple touchdowns or something like that. Everybody was in tune from start to finish, and I think that is as big of a positive to take from this game as anything else.
Yeah, I mean, look, you won the game easily, but that was my that's what I saw in the reactions, was that people were just kind of like, yeah, you left some points out there, you mm-hmm. made some mistakes, like you can't do this week, you can't do this against just about anybody else and expect that you're going to have good success. What did you think of the quarterback play?
I thought Hendon Hooker was probably not as sharp as he needed to be. He hit one deep ball. He overshot on a couple of deep balls. you know, Harrison Bailey comes in, everybody wanted to see him, and I think everybody saw why Harrison Bailey was, as we said, everybody that watched practice and could tell us about it said he was a distant third in the competition. Wow. Now, he's a true sophomore that's going to have the opportunity to get better. He's got 4 years to play. He will be fine long term. But everybody saw where he was in this quarterback competition, so hopefully that calms some nerves. I don't think, and I disagree with a lot of people on this, or a lot of people disagree with me on this. I don't think Hooker is obviously better than Milton to the point where if Milton is healthy on Saturday, you start Hooker anyway. I do think that Josh Heupel looks at it as if Milton isn't 100%, if he doesn't bring everything to the table that he normally brings to the table, I think he's going to start hitting Hooker. Milton is still listed as the starter on the depth chart. I used to do depth charts when I worked in that department.
Yeah,
they don't mean anything. Okay. But I do think that if Milton is not completely healthy, then you'll see Hooker as the starting quarterback on Saturday. But again, this is one of those games where Milton has the X factor that might get you beat, but it also might be the thing that could take over the top or take off the top and allow you to score some easy downfield passes. If he doesn't, though, you're not going to get a very consistent performance, and it could lead to a bigger loss.
This X factor that you speak of, is it simply just the big arm? Is it the legs? Is it his mental comprehension? What's the X factor? Because that Pitt game, I'm just looking at the misses. Like, is that where we're hoping he gets it together?
Yeah, I think it's the big arm. It's the idea that if he hits one of those shots down the field, he will then start to hit more of them. And a little bit of that is just hoping.
Okay.
But I really think when you look at their ability to scheme open guys downfield, if you hit one of them, and this is some sort of mental block where you just haven't been able to hit one and now it's starting to compound on itself, then I think if you hit one, you're going to start to hit them consistently. If you're able to take the top off of Florida's defense,
yeah,
and go and connect on a couple of those long plays, maybe get ahead, then it becomes a different ballgame. It becomes a ballgame where Florida, coming off a loss to Alabama, is maybe not in the here we go again because they played a tough four-quarter game against Alabama, but maybe it's a we weren't prepared to do a full four quarters against this team because we're feeling really good about ourselves coming off of pushing Alabama like nobody's really pushed in the last couple of years.
With these penalties – in these last couple games, where are we with it? The guy's just too anxious to what? I feel like that's got to get cleaned up. That's the one thing that's the most aggravating to me is watching them take away from themselves so far.
Well, yeah. I mean, against Pittsburgh, there were five different things in the Pittsburgh game that if you cleaned up, you win the football game.
Yeah.
One of them is penalties. You know, deep balls, I could go on and on. But one of them is absolutely penalties. The positive is, they cleaned it up on Saturday. Now, again, against Tennessee Tech, you still had a couple of the penalties that you had were not great timing-wise, but you cleaned it up overall. Now they have to go focus and do that again on Saturday, on the road. You can't get frustrated. That's what I think you saw against Pittsburgh. You saw some guys just get frustrated.
Yeah.
You saw false starts. You saw a little bit of extracurricular after the whistle. Well, that's 15 yards. You saw an unnecessary block downfield that calls back a big play. Those things can't happen.
Right.
Your margin is thin, and I hope that they saw in the Florida or in the Pittsburgh film how thin the margin is between winning and losing at this level. Because if they did and they clean those things up, then you have a positive vibe going forward. The negative is Josh Heupel's teams at UCF the last 2 years were some of the worst in college football for penalty yardage.
Yeah.
So that's something that they've got to clean up top to bottom, not just the players, but also the coaches making that a priority.
Brian Rice, WNML Sports Animal, joining us here on the line. Brian, Western Michigan put up 44 on Pittsburgh on Saturday. Then you look at the results across college football. The only reason I mentioned the last one is because of the offense against Pittsburgh the week before for Tennessee. But look, Alabama won the game, but they were pushed. Ohio State did not look very good at all for the second week in a row. Oklahoma had to escape a bad Nebraska team. Clemson escapes Georgia Tech and, to me, is out of the mix. I don't think there's anything they can do to put them back in the four, to me. You look at teams all across, a lot of favorites. I don't think Notre Dame – I think Notre Dame could be 1-2 right now. They didn't look all that good on Saturday either. So what are we to make of all of this? Florida looked great, but week to week in college football, teams just – right now, everybody's like, oh, well, it's Alabama and it's this team and it's everybody else. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if this is a year where the big dogs have the bite that they usually do, and we might be in for some chaos here.
I think Alabama is good enough that on a week-to-week basis, they're able to do just enough to win no matter what. But they're the only team I feel that way about. Mm-hmm. I've said for a couple of years, and I've watched it become more and more true, that in college football today, week-to-week means nothing. Mm-hmm. Just because you did this last week means nothing for this week. People are like, well, if Florida plays like that on Saturday against Tennessee, then Tennessee has no chance, which is true. But I can't bet on them looking that way 2 weeks in a row because they did in the 2 weeks before. You know, you talk about Clemson. They've got major problems on offense. One of their biggest problems is they can't take a snap under center, and it almost cost them the ballgame on Saturday. Yeah, you look at Ohio State, sleepwalking through. Yeah. Now, when they've had to have it, when you saw Tulsa take a two-touchdown or a pull within a touchdown on Saturday, Ohio State went down and scored again, pushed it back to two. It's the turning it off and turning it on that I think a lot of teams are subconsciously doing that you can't do in this game anymore. The other teams are good enough, and I think it's been pushed a little further down the line in this year by all the fifth-year guys that have come back because of the COVID free pass after last year. You have we're going to talk today on our show about the distribution of quarterbacks and how many guys from the recruiting class 3 years ago have actually panned out for their school. Well, some of them haven't panned out for their school, but they've gone somewhere else, and they've panned out there. So you have places like Tulsa. You have places like Arizona State, San Diego State, that are getting these guys that have been, you know, top 10 quarterbacks that didn't work out somewhere else, and they transfer. So it has a trickle-down effect where there are good players at every school, and if you do not give your opponent, no matter who it is, including FCS opponents, mm-hmm. if you do not give them your complete attention for the week, you are at risk of being beaten. And if you give them some momentum early on in the game, that's why I loved Josh Heupel going for it on fourth down early in the game on Saturday. It was 4th-and-1, 4th-and-2. Okay, if you don't get it, it probably doesn't hurt you. So there's not a lot of risk. But you go out and show your players that it is important that we go and go get points on this drive and take this team out of the game. You're not seeing that enough around the country. And no. So it's leading to teams losing to inferior opponents. It's losing to some close games not going your way.
I also think that there are a lot of teams that are proving that they can win when everything's stacked against them. But once there's expectation, it changes. Look at UCLA. It's not like they were all that impressive against Fresno State, because now people are expecting something out of UCLA because they won a couple of games and they had a number next to their name for the first time in years with Chip Kelly at the helm. So Florida goes and does this to Alabama. Brian, it's not hard to get up to play Alabama if you're Florida. Yeah. It's not hard to go in there knowing, yeah, we're going to give them our best shot because that's Alabama. Well, now Tennessee feels that way about Florida. I'm not saying the Vols are going to go in there and win in the swamp on Saturday. What I'm saying is, Tennessee's going to be able to get up for this game, I think, a lot more than a Florida team that hopefully is not breathing in their own hype, because that, in addition to what you just said, that's a recipe for disaster in college football right now.
Yeah, you know, this used to be the game that Florida got up for every year. Mm-hmm. Now their fans and probably some of their players think of this game as an afterthought. Well, if there are enough guys in that locker room that are thinking that way on Saturday, you're going to take Tennessee's best shot. And if they don't have the focus down in Gainesville this week, if that quarterback competition starts to come back into play even after Emory Jones had the great performance, if the defense doesn't give Josh Heupel's high-powered offense its complete attention, then that's going to be a game that's going to go to the fourth quarter and Tennessee's going to have a chance to win. Anytime you can score points and move the football like Tennessee can, you're going to be at risk of taking a loss. Now, what's Florida going to do on defense? If they bring out the same intensity on defense they had against Alabama on Saturday, then it's going to nullify the high-powered offense. If they don't, It's that gray area. It's those margins that I think determines what happens on Saturday.
Good stuff, Brian.
Yeah.
We appreciate you, brother. It's always really good to catch up with you, man. Hope everything's always going well with you.
Always fun. I did pitch this to your producer last night. He asked me if Georgia was Florida's Upper Decker. I said no, but is it possible that Florida is Georgia's bidet? Every once in a while, we got to bring it back to the bathroom. We got to have some of that off-season nonsense.
That's where Peyton goes.
Hashtag kneeling troughs. Hashtag thoughts and prayers. That's Brian, right? That's good stuff.
It's good stuff.
Look, see that point right there. I think it is important to note with college football, especially once teams start feeling themselves a little bit.
Yep.
And once they start getting press written about them, yep. UCLA is a prime example of this. People starting to talk about UCLA, and Fresno almost got them.
Yeah, they
Fresno
did.
Had them on the ropes they on did. Saturday. Nobody looks good. We haven't talked a lot about college yet, but we've got a week. You know, we got the whole week to do it. But you look at it, Clemson, Notre Dame, all these teams. Ohio State doesn't look good at all.
No.
Oklahoma doesn't look very good to me at all. I think Spencer Rattler is vastly overrated in terms of he's going to be a top five quarterback. I don't know about that, boss. I'm going to need to see more than that. The team that maybe was the most impressive on Saturday was Penn State.
Yeah.
Beating Auburn, already beating Wisconsin at Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're in the mix right now. We have a moment here where there might be a team or two we haven't seen in the college football playoff to get there. That's what my partner on Fox Sports Radio, Aaron Torres, said on Saturday. I think he's absolutely right. Because I said Iowa might be a team you need to start paying attention to.
Iowa.
Because Iowa's beaten Iowa State already.
Yes, they have.
And they bludgeoned Indiana.
They're going to have to be a little bit better on offense.
Yeah, I know. That's still
and,
an Iowa
And
team.
Actually, you can say the same thing about Penn State.
Yeah, that's true. But as of right now, who has looked all that impressive that would supplant them? I just think you're probably going to have a lot of two-loss teams this year.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to ask you, like, or just open up the questions for us. Like, what's the separator this year? Because we've seen Georgia and Clemson go at it. Only one touchdown was scored in that game, and that was defensively.
Yep.
Okay. We saw Penn State beating Auburn, but Auburn played them really well.
Yes.
Alabama,
I think
Florida,
Auburn's pretty good.
I think they are, too. And they figured that offense out and get everything together. They got a shot to be well. LSU, still don't know what to expect from them. A&M. Heck, Colorado played them to a T on the road.
Right. They admit they lost their quarterback in the first quarter of that game.
So what is the separator this year? Ohio State dropped a big one.
That's
the
point.
Shoot.
I don't think there is one. I think we're going to have the debate of all debates at the end of this year.
Yeah.
Maybe for the 3 and 4 slot.
Mm-hmm.
Like you better win your conference and win your conference championship game this year. Because there are going to be, I think there might be 8 to 10 teams that have arguments, none of which you feel great about. But Alabama, it's still Alabama and everybody else, but this Bama team's not the Bama team top to bottom that we have seen.
If I can go up against that, I'd say it's Alabama, Georgia versus everybody else.
Well, yeah, that's what I said on Saturday. I would tend to agree with that.
Yeah.
If you get Alabama, Georgia, I want to see Georgia, Florida, because Florida will get up for that game too. And they'll be playing in Jacksonville. And if Florida wins that game, Georgia never gets to the SEC title game in the first place.
And see, we said that and failed to remember myself right then that, look, Georgia only put up 7 or 10 points against Clemson. Like, so what is Georgia still in itself? Like, there's a lot to be answered this year in college football. I like it. Like he was saying, the transfer portal and everything else may have evened things up a little bit. As far as being able to get guys 6-year seniors, we're watching one of Tennessee's best D linemen, a guy that came back this year who's playing well. So it's Florida week, Jack.
Yeah, again, like I said, once you put a number next to somebody's name, they start feeling themselves. You can be UCLA and go loose. I mean, UCLA had Fresno. Mm-hmm. Fresno had them. Then UCLA had them back. We finished our show at 1 a.m. Local time on Sunday morning. I left, and then Fresno came back and won that game.
Mm-hmm.
And now what are you talking about with UCLA? Pac-12 had a terrible day. Oregon struggled, too. They ended up bludgeoning Stony Brook in the second half, but it wasn't a great first half. Again, you can get up if you're Oregon to play Ohio State. That's the only thing. If I'm a Florida fan, I'm like, take Tennessee seriously. You should beat Tennessee if you're Florida. You should beat them easily, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
But it's not Alabama, and sometimes it can get hard, and you can play down to your competition a little bit. And that can lead to some real trouble. When we come back, we can keep talking a little bit of college. If you got thoughts, 615-737-1045. 737-1045 on Twitter at jmartinermohan, 1045 The Zone.
I just think people like to say a lot of and it's nice to come back in here after a game like that.
Jay Martin Ramon, that was Aaron Rodgers after the win last night. Came back to beat the Lions. 4 touchdown passes, 3 of them to Aaron Jones. So Jones did a lot of work on some of those, of course. But good comeback. And look, you get the Lions. That's kind of what you hope that you're going to be able to do.
Yeah.
So you're 1-1 if you're the Packers. We did our top 7, bottom 3. There's a little bit of disagreement. Green Bay, if Green Bay goes and beats San Francisco this coming week, they'll probably be back in the top 7.
Yeah, who they but have there?
San
said?
Francisco.
Oh man,
yeah, that'd be a good game. Really solid game.
Oh wow.
In the afternoon window, wow. I believe. a little bit of news from the NBA. J.J. Redick announced his retirement this morning, about 5 minutes ago. 15 years in the league. Yeah. I don't think people saw him having a 15-year NBA career. I feel like he exceeded expectations.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the great Duke college players, obviously.
Yep.
But what was he going to do in the NBA? Because a lot of Duke guys had gone there, and it had not gone very well for them. I think Redick was great. I think Redick found a good role as a spot-up three-point shooter. And a dude that joined a couple of playoff teams that were making runs, he had a nice career, really nice career.
And he was a part of it, too, like those runs.
Yeah.
I've heard Ron talk about that. Why? Because he's a basketball guy through and through, man. And he was speaking about a young guy that he knew that said, and Ron was like, look, man, he need to just define his role, do exactly what the team is telling him to do, and he going to make this team. He going to be fine. Don't try to dribble. Be a spot-up guy. And you can tell J.J. Redick is a guy that found out, look, I got a nice little thing that I can do. I'm good at it. I can handle the ball. I can get open when I need to, and I'm a spot-up shooter. That is a beautiful thing when you find a guy that knows their role. Again, I look at the same thing as Fitzpatrick in the NFL at quarterback. Like, look, you know what you bring me in to do. Let me do those things and I'll move the heck on. Like, shout out to him. 15 years.
I mean, dude, he shot 40% from three last year. He said on a podcast a couple of months ago, look, I haven't trained in months. Like, I think he was just finally like, I don't need to do this anymore.
Yeah.
He's done well with the, you know, the Ringer podcast and some of the stuff that he's done.
Mm-hmm.
He's got respect. He's got respect in the league as being a tough-nosed guy that can make a big shot for you. Definitely one of the best shooters I've ever seen.
He found that. It's a lot of guys that want to do more and go outside of the box and be the star, be the stud. Look, sometimes you can have a great career playing a hell of a role, and he's done that, man. You knew he was going to be reliable. He was always available, and he made shots when you needed him to. That, to me, is a very successful career. He is a Duke legend to me and how he's gone about it, especially on the pro level. Because, like you said, the system is Duke, and Duke is awesome. But he found a way to be an NBA player in this world of NBA.
So he played 15 years.
Yeah.
14, he made the playoffs. 13 in a row, he made the playoffs.
Wow.
At different stops, yes. He was a great role player, though. He was a role player that could go in and help your team. Like, there were guys that did that won championships. Like, you talk about a guy like Leandro Barbosa or somebody like that would bounce around a little bit, but he would always make a team better. J.J. Redick just gave you another weapon, and he would be somebody. Like, he really helped Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Somebody probably would have potentially talked to him, but I just think after you've done it for 15 years, I mean, he was a starting guy, but he was a role player. I see Ron saying he's a starter. I mean, I get that, Ron, but he was a role player.
He found out something that was good for him, man. Shout out. Like I said, that's a legendary career, especially when there are so many poster boards in his league and the league is different. He fell into an era that was fit for him. Shooters. Shooters are going to shoot, and he did it well. 40% last year? Yeah, he could play again if he wants to, and I wouldn't be shocked if they pull some. I mean, if he wanted to, he could. Right now it's a little bit too close. He's announcing it, but there's always room for people that can shoot the ball, man.
Yeah, no question.
And got a reputation, too.
And, I mean, like I said, he's done pretty well with some of the little bit of media he's done. If he wants to do more, I bet you there's a role for him.
I
bet you there's a big job for him if he wants it.
100%.
I mean, look at – one guy that's really good and solid was Vince Carter. I mean, Vince Carter finally, I mean, he played a long career.
21?
Now, it's not that he flamed out. He just had to change his game a little bit. But Vince Carter was great for a very, very long time. But he also, he started doing TV.
Yep.
He's good at it.
And he's like, good at it.
Likeable guy. I think Redick has similar deals. Also from Tobacco Road. Yeah. He played at Duke. Vince played at North Carolina. But I don't know if Redick wants to do it. He played 15 years. He's made good money. He can go off and do nothing if he wants to.
Kendrick Perkins.
Yeah, we don't have to get into that. But
Or Vince Carter.
Yeah.
I'm taking Vince.
Sure.
Kendrick's good for TD.
Sure,
I give him that. I give him
that.
No. He's different.
No, Kendrick Perkins isn't any good. He's not.
He's different.
Kendrick did an interview a couple of months ago, and he's like, I'm going to be better on TV than I ever was in the league. I'm going to be one of the greats ever. Like, he literally said that in an interview. I'm like, okay, bud.
I'm rocking with Kendrick.
Moan, I appreciate you.
You're doing a lot of defending today, Mo. You seem to be like, I'm going to defend.
It's his nature.
You're defending Caleb Farley on.
I did.
On the chat.
Because he's young. He going to have time,
can
man.
Can I just point one thing out real
Go
quick?
Ahead.
J.C. Horn had an interception starting for the Panthers, who you have in your top seven right now.
Yeah.
Patrick Surtain, 2-0 Broncos, had an interception
guys?
As well. Like 12 picks before Caleb Farley.
Exactly. They weren't available for the Titans to get them.
I'm not saying they should have taken them. I'm saying those are guys that are contributing at the same position.
But also later, and we know that Farley is coming off an injury right now.
We do know that. But that means that Titans fans at this point need to just think, okay, this year's a wash. It's not going to matter at all until next year because he's probably not going to contribute.
Week 12 before Jeff played last time, wasn't it? In his rookie year? Or whenever it was later in the season.
It was later in the season.
If he comes in and play a role and does okay with that, you got growth for next year.
I just think this year, anything you get from him is probably a bonus. It's what it seems to feel like.
Yeah.
Outside of maybe a little bit of special teams, maybe.
He's got I think it's smart that he go play special teams.
I just think if your window's not that long, that's a problem. That worries me a little bit.
Yeah.
And you just hope that he's healthy. We got Rashawn Evans coming up. Titans linebacker. Talk to him about the win, what it means, where this team is right now. Fun conversation to be had. We'll do it after the top of the hour headlines here. J. Martin, Ramon, 104.5 The Zone.